Welcome to College Football Roundtable, your source for college football coverage, including major storylines,
playoffs,
can't miss game previews, and picks each week. Join your hosts, Dan, Rob, and Jordan at the roundtable for a show unlike anything else. As for Football presents the College Football Roundtable.
Week 10 has come and gone, and there are some teams in the hunt, and then there's still some teams that are in the offseason looking to rebuild. But the real question is there such a thing as rebuilding in today's college football? What's up, Trash Talkers? Welcome back. I am your host, Rob, here in Fayetteville, North Carolina, to this episode of College Football Roundtable, or you prefer, you can just call it Ring Knocker Radio. We've got three O's and an NCO today.
You're outnumbered, Joe.
Yeah, I'm Rob, your host here in Fayetteville, North
Carolina. I'll kick that door, Jeff. Don't worry about it.
We've got Dano Ecobasa, Coastal Connecticut. We got Trigger Joe calling from the home of the Big House, and joining us from the great state of Texas is Omar.
Best country in the world.
And he's going to be joining us today for the show. But how are we doing, guys? How was the weekend? What did you guys end up watching? We'll go Dan, Omar, and then Joe.
So we celebrated my wife's birthday this past weekend, and I spent most of my time out and in and around Mystic, Connecticut. I did catch most of the Navy-Notre Dame game on the radio as we were driving out there, but I was pleased that the game was virtually over by halftime because, you know, we got out of the car, and it's like, I don't want to follow this. I got to focus on my family. I did my best, too, to keep track of Tulane, North Texas, but again, you know, thankfully, Tulane sort of put it away, and I didn't have to, like, pay a lot of attention.
For sure. Omar, how about you?
Yeah, I was actually in the press box for Notre Dame Navy. Fun experience. Wow. Very, I don't mean to brag. That's literally like what I was watching on the noon slot. It was kind of surreal. Got to meet Heather Dinich, Pat Forty, networked a bit, got some business cards. Now I want to buy a business card holder. I don't know if they still sell those nowadays or if people my age even buy those still. But
I get the old Rolodex.
Yeah, Rolodex. Yes. Now I know where that term came from because someone said it and I had to look it up. So I'm gonna have to give me a Rolodex. But then on the train over to my co-host on the regular show, Jackson, to his house, I watched a bit of Columbia Dartmouth. I don't know if many people are aware of the storyline with Columbia. They've only got one Ivy League title. Came all the way back in 1961. They lost to Dartmouth, so a lot needs to happen for Columbia to get their second Ivy League title. And then for the nightcap at his place, we just kind of whipped around. I actually watched the most SEC I've watched all year with LSU, Texas A&M, because I am aggressively boycotting the SEC as long as there continues to be ABC triple headers of the SEC, because ABC is not what it is anymore.
Nice. Fair point. Thanks, Rick, for that comment. Ray says, now I know what a Rolodex means. I think I just felt in my bones turning into powder at that comment. Yes, absolutely. Joe, how about you?
You know, my Saturday was pretty wide open. I had Michigan tickets, but didn't end up going. They didn't play till 7 o'clock. Thank God they whooped up on little brother, because that is not any kind of way to spend the rest of your football season if you live in the state of Michigan when you lose that game. I did watch a little UFC, pretty much all of it in between games. Or I'm sorry, I watched football in between fights because they were in Abu Dhabi and during the afternoon kickoff time. So that was actually kind of cool. I actually caught a good bit of football Thursday and Friday in the form of the drubbing Pittsburgh put on Syracuse. Colonel Rob, you called it, said look out for them. And then Louisville-Boston College was a great game, and UNLV-Boise State did not disappoint. Ashton Jonte went out and did his thing again. He did it when it mattered and didn't hang the same numbers he does, but he still was over 100 in a touchdown. And both of those games on Friday night were entertaining. And then I did watch a little bit of Southern Cal stomping Rutgers, who is putrid on offense. I thought Michigan was bad. Woo.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. So for me, my slate was pretty open as well. I watched Notre Dame put the hammer down on Navy. I was like, what is going on? It's like sometimes we get hangovers, and we talk about this privately. We don't talk about it very much openly on the show, but like there's a Service Academy hangover right now, right? Because everybody's excited because of the record at the start of the season. And I'm okay with that. As an Army fan, I'm really okay with it. But as you watch the performance that Navy put on against Notre Dame, like literally there was an article that was written. It's like, hey, Navy's good when they can hold on to the football. Well, no crap. Like every team is good as long as you don't have six turnovers, right? And I think that
how many turnovers did they have?
They had six total, right? Oh, so I had five fumbles and a pick. Like the score is indicative of that. But the one thing that I found the most interesting is, and James from Brigade Review posted it as well, was like Notre Dame's defense only got two stops against Navy. Yeah. Navy stopped themselves. And so that's the bigger discussion point. Like turnovers, yes, I get it. But like they were actually moving the ball until they like lost control of it. So that's an interesting discussion to see where they go, you know, going into the next week. And then, of course, you know, Tulane is trying to make their case for being the best team in the American. I think that's arguable that they are. You know, yes, Army's record notwithstanding, Tulane is putting up points. They smashed North Texas, and everybody knows that North Texas is one of the toughest contests that Army will have this season as well.
It was a shootout. That made me confident that Army could score on them because, I mean, North Texas did hang 37, but
yes,
Tulane just kept on. Their offense is exhausting.
Yeah, they're pretty doggone good. And speaking of people that are pretty doggone good, we've got a realtor for you. This is our first commercial. So if you've been listening to the show at all, you know that we have a realtor that supports us. Her name is Jocelyn Bradley. If you're PCSing to the Fort Liberty area, she can help you. Jocelyn is a veteran who spent her career in Army logistics. There, she discovered her passion for making a difference in people's lives. She's committed to helping her clients find their dream home when they're in their market, and she provides exceptional service when she's working for you. Jocelyn also has an extended network of veteran realtors who can support you if you're moving somewhere else in the country. So if you're in the market for a home, she should be your first call. Jocelyn has decided to support Astro Football this year, and she can get you into the home of your dreams. So if you are in doubt or if you're trying to move, just recently run over to the Astro Football website, click on her business card on the side, and it will take you to her website. You can connect with Jocelyn, and she can get you set up looking for a new home. On to the Service Academy standings. Dana, how about you?
You have number 23, Army. I will have you know they are now number 21 in both the coaching poll and the AP poll. The Black Knights had a bye. We will see them take on the Zoomies of Air Force this weekend. Not much to really say about that. Navy fell out of the rankings after getting whooped up on by Notre Dame. You noted, you know, if they just sort of stuck with a power running game, I think that game was theirs. Certainly could have been. Guys in the first club too were wondering if maybe Blake Horvath didn't re-injure his thumb, as I know he had some thumb issues. Certainly those pitches were not going where they were intended to go. So I don't know what that was, but what a shame, because that guy's Heisman Trophy race just died right there on the field. And the Zoomies also had a bye. They better put on their big boy pants this weekend because they're coming to Mikey Stadium. And you know that if there is a one coach that Coach Munkin would like to hang 70 against, it is Troy Calhoun. Over in the non-FBS Service Academies, the Coast Guard Bears are now 4-3. They edge Norwich 17-13 this past weekend. They take on Worcester Polytech at home on Flow Sports at noon this weekend. Merchant Marine Academy is now 5-2. They lost a close one this past weekend to WPI 35-24. The Mariners have two games left this season, both at home. They take on Springfield next week at 2:30 on Flow Sports. Really surprised Merchant Marine Academy lost to WPI. That's a shame.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see because like their league is so small that they play basically the teams after each other. So it's a good gauge to see how well the Secretary's Cup is going to be. And if you didn't tune into that, you know, James covered it last year. We talked a little bit about the Secretary's Cup as we got closer to that game. Around the American, so again, game of the week, I'm going to highlight two just because we can, because we've got a Thursday night game. So the Thursday night game is going to be Tulane and Charlotte. That's a mixed bag. Like, if you're a Charlotte fan, like, we know that Charlotte can move the ball. Like, they looked pretty good against Navy, but Tulane's Tulane. They are probably the toughest team in the American right now. But we shall see. And then for Friday, you've got USF playing FAU. And I think that should be a better game because USF, you know, USF and FAU are kind of like the same story for their season this year. And so I think that's a pretty comparable matchup. Saturday games, you know, although it's not an American matchup, Army versus Air Force, of course. Programming note, we'll be talking about that tomorrow on the As for Football Army Football Show. And then we're going to have that show public. So for those of you that really want to know how As for Football works, here's your opportunity to check us out. We're going to be doing the rivalry games will be out in the open. So you can see how we talk about and update you on the Black Knights. And then you got Memphis at UTSA. not shaping up to be a good contest. I think Memphis is, you know, streaky. UTSA, like, what happened? What a, you know, glorious collapse this past weekend in that game. And then Rice at Navy should be an interesting one. And that's because, like, Rice is making moves. They're making offseason moves right now. So coaches are getting fired. Navy, I don't know if Navy is nicked up. They probably are, just based off of the amount of abuse they took from Notre Dame. But Rice is an easy person to beat up on. However, you know, looking at that game, that's a trap game because you had a big, you know, big conference or big non-conference rivalry game. You're going into a conference game with a team that you should beat, you know, by at least two scores, and we'll see what happens there. And then, of course, Tulsa at UAB, that's kind of the also-rans out there, and that's the American. But moving on to the top 10 of the week, we'll toss it back over to Joe.
All right. At number one, we got no change. We got Oregon. The Ducks handled the Fighting Illini in Eugene 38-9. Oregon travels to Ann Arbor and right down the road from where I'm sitting on Saturday to play Michigan, and I'm not really looking forward to it. Number two is the Georgia Bulldogs. No change there. They were off on Saturday. Man, I have my sentences screwed up there for a second. I was getting cross-eyed. The Bulldogs have Florida coming to town on Saturday, so that should be I think Georgia's still looking to make a statement that they're better than any team in the country, and I think
I agree completely with that.
Be a drubbing.
Completely.
Now we get interesting. Penn State's at number three. They had no change. They played well and better than I thought they would against a tough Wisconsin team on the road at night and won 28-13. Penn State has the Buckeyes of Columbus, Ohio State Buckeyes, coming to town this weekend. So right underneath them, number four is Ohio State with no change there. Speaking of the Buckeyes, they had themselves an ugly win on Saturday over Nebraska and cost me a loss. Instead of going 5-1, I went 4-2, but ended up handling the business against Nebraska, winning 21-17. And if they're going to stumble, great teams stumble and win at the same time. So, you know, why not? And after Oregon could be a big game hangover. So, and I said they traveled to Penn State on Saturday, so I can't wait for that one. And number five, whiteout? What's up?
Is that a whiteout game?
I'd be shocked if it wasn't, but I haven't seen anything official. But they like to do that for those games. That place is going to be rocking.
Yeah, for sure.
At number five, we got the Hurricanes, who bump up a spot as they made light work of Florida State 36-14. Miami is home against Duke on Saturday, which with the way Duke played SMU, I think that should be a pretty solid competitive game for three quarters. At number six, we got Texas, who for some reason bumped down a spot as they go on the road and beat a really tough Vanderbilt team. 27-24. The Longhorns have no game on Saturday. I'm sure they're looking forward to that week off because Vandy is a lot tougher than the preview said this season. So at number seven, we got Tennessee. No change there. The Volunteers were off last weekend and stayed put in the seventh spot. They're home against Kentucky on Saturday. Look for them to win that one. And the team getting the most love in the top 10, the Notre Dame Fighting Irish, jump up from 12-8, four spots. After absolutely abusing Navy 51-14, Notre Dame is off on Saturday. At number nine, we got the BYU Cougars bumping up two spots as they went into Central Florida and handled them 37-24. BYU is off on Saturday. And rounding out the top 10, another team bumping up four spots, the Aggies of Texas A&M. Well-deserved after beating LSU 38-23. A&M travels to South Carolina on Saturday.
Yeah. And moving on to the top 25 losses for the year, we got 41 notable losses this week. Of course, as noted, Illinois losing to Oregon. It's like, I got a question for you guys. Is Quinn Ewers hurt? Because I'm starting to think that there's something going on with him because, like, his play has not been great since he came back from that injury. I think he may still have, like, something going on there. Again, they won, but number 25, Vanderbilt, they're going to drop out, but I think they'll pop right back into the top 25 if they have a solid win this weekend. LSU got outscored 17-6 in the fourth quarter, and they're like totally salted their chances of coming back against Texas A&M. And then, of course, the beatdown by the Fighting Irish on Navy, which pushed them out of the top 25. And again, do we think a QB injury is something to do with Navy's poor performance on the field, or do we just think that they got executed? You got a note, Joe?
Yeah, I was, as Daniel was saying it, I was thinking, you know, when you go into Notre Dame and you're a service academy, that's a similar mindset to Iraq. If you can hump the load and come back, it doesn't matter. You're fine. Rub some dirt on it. And that's the way these guys approach it. So absolutely a real possibility that Blake Horvath wasn't 100%. But, dude, you got to kill those guys to keep them out of games like that. So, but if you can't grip with your thumb and you're throwing a pitch with a guy bearing down on you, I mean, think about your thumb slipping. I mean, that had to have something to do with it if he was injured.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, and I don't think anybody will ever, like, reveal the overall.
Certainly the coaches that kind of come out and say, you know, yeah, Blake got his thumb injured. We decided to leave him in there because, screw it, he's the fastest guy we got. That's not going to occur. But, I mean, those pitches were wild. And he could certainly still throw the ball. So, but, you know, listen, this is like irresponsible speculation at this point, but it was an incredible, in a bad way, performance.
Well, there's injuries you sit down for, and then there's injuries you play through, is what I'm saying. So it could have been something that wasn't right that he wasn't even vocal about because he wanted to play against Notre Dame. And with the competitor he is, I would imagine that's, you know, you're not going to run right to the coach and say, sit me down, is all, you know.
Yeah, it always goes back to, are you hurt, are you injured, right? You can play if you're hurt, but if you're injured, you can't play. And most people, most athletes will err on the side of, coach, I'm just hurt.
James Conn taught me that point.
Yep. Straight up. All right. So speaking of coaching and things that need to be talked about, we'll move on to the Blue Falcon of the Week. Joe, what do you got?
Oh, man. I might get some blowback on this one because this one's a unique one. I had to check and make sure, but the show says as for football, so I justified squeezing this in on a loophole. The Blue Falcon of the Week is going to former Miami Hurricane and Georgia Bulldog Tyreek Stevenson, currently a defensive back for the Chicago Bears. Now, if you don't know who Tyreek Stevenson is, welcome to the club, but apparently he needed to be famous because on the final play of the game this Sunday against the Washington Commanders, when his team had the lead, he was down on the goal line in Hail Mary coverage when he decided it would be a good time to taunt the Commanders fans. After the play, of course, right? Tell me it was after the play. Oh, he was doing it as the quarterback received the snap from the center while the wideouts were 20 yards downfield. It doesn't get any more indifferent to the fact that you're part of a team than that kind of behavior. Dude, if a fan got under your skin that bad, then win the game and then go talk some smack. Not Tyreek, though. Not only was he late getting over to the grouping of receivers where the ball was thrown, he was the actual one who tipped it into the receiver's hands to lose the game. I'm sorry, boys. I know this is a college football show, but this guy was the biggest Blue Falcon in football this week. And for that reason, I'm making an exception for Tyreek Stevenson because I've never seen a guy think less of his teammates and more of himself during an actual play than this.
Yeah.
That was nuts.
Yeah, that was pretty insane.
It was amazing.
I couldn't believe what I was watching.
Well, here's the other part. Like, if you really want to solidify Jaden Daniels as Offensive Rookie of the Year, keep doing stuff like that.
Right? Not on Dan Campbell's roster. We go for it on 4th and 18 from our own 28.
Yeah. That's how it works. So the topic this week is something that, like, we started chatting about in the Firsty Club, and I wanted to bring some light on this and have a more open discussion about it because I think it's something that everybody is feeling it right now because of the transfer portal. Everybody can understand right now that we know that college football has changed significantly since, you know, probably the post-COVID era, but even more so now in the name, image, and likeness. You know, so we figure we deep dive into it because we've talked about it. You know, we've certainly seen mixed reviews position-wise. Like, some guys are thriving. If you look at, like, Dylan Gabriel and Will Howard, they're doing pretty well at their new respective schools. But then you also have other guys that, like, were starters at other places, and we don't even know their names anymore because they're no longer on the roster or they're just not playing as well as they were at their previous school. But, you know, you got to think about who's in the top 10 in the portal and kind of what those impacts are. But let's open the floor. I'll give it to Omar first, Dan, Joe, and then I'll bring up the rear on this. But, like, what are your thoughts on the transfer portal? Because, like, the top 10 teams are wild, and then you're seeing, you know, performances that we wouldn't expect because why is, you know, Vanderbilt such a powerhouse this year? Diego Pavia, right? Transfer quarterback. And the question is, how many, you know, and we ask it every week, and I, you know, it would take probably as long as it took me to write the show to really dive into the number of FBS QB1s that transferred in from another school. So let's go around the horn. What are your thoughts on the transfer portal? Is it working? Is it not working? What do we think?
Yeah, so I guess before I start, I saw the comment about the Daniel Jones jersey. Just blame my wife, right? Day off, had a lunch date. It matched her dress, and I just happened to have this in the closet.
Was that the one that was on sale? I hope it was on a fire sale.
It was on sale. I would not buy a Daniel Jones jersey full price. So I'm just going to set the record straight. I saw the comment about that. But about the transfer portal, I think with anything, it's like a double-edged sword, and I know it's a cop-out answer because there's good things to it, right? Diego Pavia. I grew up in New Mexico, my teenage years, right? And New Mexico State was just absolute like dog water, right? They always have been, for lack of a better term, 56-year bull drought. But seeing Diego Pavia come from New Mexico State could probably do a lot for guys that are middle of the road guys in recruiting, your 2 or 3-star recruits, your JUCO guys, because New Mexico State has long been a destination for a lot of JUCO guys that are overlooked by FBS schools. And I think the transfer portal in that way makes it easier for guys to stop at schools like that and allow those schools to catch lightning in a bottle like they did under Jerry Kill. You know, two bowl appearances, back-to-back bowl appearances for the first time since 1959 and 1960. Now, of course, it's not good for the long-term health of those schools, but it's good in the short term to catch lightning in a bottle in barren situations like that. The other good side is come bowl season with the transfer portal and the mass exodus, you get like really weird situations / feel-good stories like Minnesota last year, the quarterback, Cole Kramer, for Minnesota, the fourth-string quarterback, passed for 26 yards, completed 8 passes for 26 yards, and somehow won a bowl game. You don't get that without the transfer portal. That's a story he'll have for the rest of his life. So that's a good side. The bad side is you don't get guys developing in one system. And I think we saw what the transfer portal is taking away from us in the Penn State-Wisconsin game, where Bo Pribula came in off the bench after Drew Aller was hurt. And you saw 3 years of riding the pine, of him just sitting behind Sean Clifford, as well as Drew Aller, and learning the system. And he took Penn State to victory. He helped them stay pretty much at a front runner in the playoff race. And he looks like a guy that will take over once Aller leaves and everything. So that's what the portal's taking away. But I think generally, I really think I just think it's a double-edged sword. Just like, I know it's a cop-out, but I lean on kind of like a 55% good for college football in terms of player agency and spotlighting a lot of schools that are overlooked, because who would have heard of Incarnate Ward if not for Cam Ward? You know, I was aware of him. I just want to say that I was aware of him in, you know, the spring season 2021, but not many casual words,
so. Well, who else but Omar then? Yeah.
Dano, how about you? What are your thoughts?
I mean, you've just convinced me that the kids who have a pro mentality and enough sort of talent to play at some level in the pros can succeed in the transfer portal era, in the sense that they're just going to go and ball out and do their thing, and that's fine. But most of these kids, I've said this before, it's like the real world. You know, we picked 53 strangers to try to be a college football team, and it's not working, and it's totally not working at the group of five level. I mean, look at Army scheduled. Nobody thought that those teams were going to be, you know, terrible, that the Black Knights are going to play essentially bad teams for the first 8 games of the season. But this is where we are, and it's mostly because there's talented kids that don't know each other, don't know how to play with each other, and maybe they're going to turn it around later in the season. But, you know, week 10, and half these teams haven't started that turnaround, and coaches are getting fired now. Like, it's a little nutty. So I guess I like anything that gives the Certifus Academies whatever advantage that they can get, but it's not, there's a lot of bad football out there, like a lot. And that sucks.
Yeah, I agree. Joe, how about you?
Yeah. And reading the question, I don't know if helping or hurting is the right way for me to describe my take on it. Because what I think it's doing is actually unveiling a brand new way that college football is going to be played. A much different definition of recruit commitment has clearly become a reality. And I feel like the teams that get it right feast. And for the teams that want to stay a little more traditional in their approach, it's been famine. kind of like what Omar said, you know, it's either bang or bust, and you catch lightning in a bottle, or you get a guy that can't get on the same page with his wideouts, or, you know, and hasn't known his guys he's throwing the ball to for more than 6 months. So I think that it's going to be a regulated thing for the next 10 to 15 years as to how it's going to be most efficient and uniform across the board, to the point that the original transfer portal may become unrecognizable in a decade, because it's still in its infancy. So as far as its helpfulness compared to its hurtfulness, I think it all depends on the player. But I do think that a kid that it's experienced 2 years of college, a higher education, and networks with coaches and Division I talent for 2 years is going to probably have a better slate of information as to what's the best fit for him to go to. So I believe they're a little more well-informed when they make that second pick after high school. Like, for instance, Josiah Stewart comes out of Coastal Carolina after breaking the sack record and was virtually unknown in these parts, and now he's filling Aiden Hutchinson's shoes at Michigan. And if he has a good pro day and finishes his season healthy, he's probably going to go in the first 2 days of the draft. And I don't know if that's possible at Coastal Carolina. I think his chances might be better coming out of a program like Michigan, because a lot of scouts say, okay, what kind of talent did you do it against? And now he can say, oh, Ohio State, I won the Alabama game for us last year, which he did. They watched the film. And, you know, so for kids like that, it's been a dream. And I'm sure for kids, it's been a nightmare. But I think we still got a lot to learn about it. But I know the portal has been a great success for the Colorado Buffaloes and Deion Sanders. And I'll turn it over to you, because I know you got something on that.
Yeah. So two things. The first part of it is going back and you look at, like, I think of Grayson McCall, right? Grayson McCall was a standout player at Coastal Carolina. He comes to NC State, moves to the ACC, and now his football career is over, right? He moved to NC State to get a better offensive line, a bigger offensive line, a higher performing offensive line, and he still gets injured. And, you know, I don't know if you saw it a couple weeks ago, but the kid makes a formal announcement that he's retiring from football because he's got too many concussions.
That's right. Sad.
And that's not sick. Something that a kid under the age of 30 should be even considering at the level of play that he had leading up to that point. And I think the transfer portal played a part into it, because it's like, hey, come to this school, better competition, but with better competition comes better athletes, right? So if you get hit, you know, you're going
to. He definitely didn't get a better offensive line.
Yeah, North for
Carolina
sure.
State is not as good as advertised.
Well, he was also playing against some big time defensive lines.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he didn't at Coastal. They play real football, but day in and day out, if you're in the ACC, you're going to see a step above talent.
Yeah. And it's the same discussion with, like, you know, how many years did it take for us to get to running RPOs in the NFL, right? Everybody said the option will never work in the NFL because there are too many athletes. And now the longer it goes on, there's more parity because people develop, things change. And I think that's the scary part of the transfer portal, is a guy transferring for a better opportunity and not realizing that, like, yeah, you're going from, you know, Conference USA into the SEC. There's a step up in competition, even though, you know, most leagues would not want to say that. We all can see visually on Saturday that there is a huge change in the overall performance of the teams there. And then back to your point, you know, that's why they're the cover art, for two reasons. One, because I think it's super cool that Deion Sanders is going to call, you know, the 99-year-old super fan of the Colorado Buffaloes and tell her that we're going bowling. That part I really, really like. But the other part of it is like, Colorado was able to do something that no one else has been able to do in the transfer portal, and that is transfer enough people in to get success. Yes, but they also made some coaching moves there as well. And so you can't just say Deion flushed all these players and got all these new guys and now they're winning all of a sudden. Yes, he did. But there was also I won't say a significant change, but when you change your offensive coordinator and your defensive coordinator, that's a pretty decent change inside of a college program to make the difference. And so when you look at the way that the offense is performing, the defense is better. Like, hell, they outrushed the number one rushing team in the country when they played UCF and beat them with a better running game than UCF could put together. So at some point you have to acknowledge, like, something is going on in Colorado, because, like, their season total is two more than they had last year. They're going bowling and they're probably going to win probably 2 to 4 more. And I think it's not just on the shoulders of, you know, Travis Hunter and Shador Sanders this season. They actually have some talent. They got some good wide receivers on that team. And all of those guys that are great are portal, you know, kids. And so for a team like that, I think the portal gives you an opportunity to kind of reshape your team very, very quickly. But I think the coaches matter too. And the coaches that are able to bring those guys together quickly and create a culture are the guys that are showing the most success. And I think that argument holds true for every team that doesn't have a lot of transfer people either. Like, that's why the service academies, well, two of the three are doing well this season, is because they have a culture. They have coaches that have been there forever that are vested and invested into those players. And so they're playing much, much better football than some of their counterparts that had wholesale changed 20, 30 people in the, you know, in the transfer portal. Like, hey, we've got all these skill guys, but guess what? If you bring all these skill guys, or if I bring a, you know, a wide receiver four from Alabama, and that kid expects to be wide receiver one at my group of five school, and he's not getting his touches, that kid's looking for the portal, you know, next year. And look at Matt Sluka, man. That kid had all the potential in the world. Where is he going to end up next season? I don't think ULV wants him back, right? You
know, to touch on what you said about Colorado, not only did he put that team together, but those kids want to win for their coach, maybe like no other team in the country. Those kids respect their coach, maybe like no other team, because I mean, he's been there, he's done it. I mean, what Deion's doing is incredible. I mean, those kids want to win for him.
Yeah,
and I think he brought him in and instantly gets that respect because of who he is. He's done it.
Yeah, yeah. I think truly the biggest thing is like all the shade that gets thrown on Deion Sanders is truly because he figured it out. He's figured out the transfer portal way sooner than everybody else did, right?
Yeah, and he's playing a different game.
Yeah,
he is actively playing a different game than a lot of the other college coaches and guys like Saban, who were good at the old game. You know, some of them walked away
or now gone. But guess what? Guess who he's talking about on College Game Day this Saturday? Prime. You know, he's like, hey, don't sleep on Prime and the Buffaloes, because he's friends with Deion Sanders and he knows what's going on in that locker room. And I guarantee you, if Nick Saban could have bought Deion Sanders in as a player representative or a player coach, he'd still be in Alabama. Right. Yeah. If he had somebody that could manage the talent pool like Deion is doing. And I'm not saying that he has all the answers, because he's made some, you know, mistakes that people have been critical of, and that's fine. But you can say that. But a team that went 4-8 last season, that's going bowling this season and has a potential to win, you know, several more games, I think it is what it is.
I mean, and who does Shedeur Sanders take his quarterback critique from? You know,
Tom Brady. Yeah.
Because his dad's that guy. So that's who's mentoring Shedeur Sanders right now. So, I mean, the fact that Deion can pull that kind of stuff off, and you know, he'd do the same thing for Travis or any other superstar. He'd put him in front of NFL talent that could develop him. Dude, that's a major pull.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and think about it. Like, Pete Carroll had that in USC for a while, you know, like the stars on the sidelines, like that's just transitioned to Colorado. But like back then when USC was in their heyday, like every time you turned around, there was some famous person. Texas kind of has that with Matthew McConaughey. So like with this new name, image and likeness kind of mentality, you're getting people that are going to come out and support your team. And they're diehard fans, right? They love, you know, they love their teams and they're going to show up for them. And speaking of showing up, we've got the guy that's going to show up for you to help you get a new mortgage. Over to you, Dan, for the next commercial.
That is an amazing segue. There's a second of two. Friends, if you listen to the show before, you know that we are sponsored by Craig Oxane, Vice President of Residential Lending for New American Funding in Chicago. Craig is a member of the West Point Class of 1994, licensed to lend in all 50 states, but based out of Chicago. He is one of the most successful VA lenders in the country. Why? Because he's going to offer you super competitive rates, and because I don't know if you guys have bought a house, but that mortgage process is super confusing. And interest rates moving all over the place, trying to figure out, you know, all the stuff with the house itself, plus the financing, the appraisal. And it's just not the time to try to deal with some clown who's trying to make a buck off you, who just doesn't care. You're just a number. You know, you're dealing with some call center, random big box bank, minus website. And friends, this is how the West Point network functions, right? Craig is helping us stay in business here at As for Football. And we're trying to help you get the best deal on a mortgage that we can by introducing you to the very man you need to meet. A real guy, like a person you can call on the phone who will actually call you back. Plus, Plus, this is important. Craig does not charge landing fees for veterans. That's a huge savings, like $1,300. $1,300. Like, get that money. So, Craig Oxane, Vice President of Residential Lending, check him out. His link is on our website. Just go to askforfootball.com. Scroll down. You'll see his little business card. Click on that. Fill out the questionnaire and you'll be talking to him in a couple of hours. Couldn't be easier. And I'm telling you, he gets 5 stars for his reviews with service all the time. And Old Sarge says, Angry Colonel Rob is killing it with the segues.
Yes, I'm trying to. But we also had a question in the chat. Speaking of Navy, any thoughts on their implosion, Notre Dame? We're going to ask you to back up about 20 minutes and go to the top of the show.
Horatio, call your next case.
Yeah. I mean, the reality of it is that game should have gone better. I think people anticipated it going better. I think Vegas certainly did.
And hey, some of us thought Notre Dame was going to cover.
Yeah. I really didn't see that going on the same way in my mind.
Fair point. So moving on to the games of the week. So we got football on Tuesday again, which is awesome. That's always great. So you've got 3 games. You got New Mexico State at FIU, Louisiana at Texas State, and Louisiana Tech at Sam Houston. Those are all kicking off at 7, 7:30, and 8 o'clock, respectively, on CBS Sports Network, ESPN2, and ESPNU. Friday or Wednesday night matchups, if you can believe that, Jacksonville State and Liberty. I think that's going to be a good contest. I think Liberty's kind of wounded. Jackson State is playing pretty good ball right now, and I think they can put it on them. And this is a cheap plug for Dano, Western Kentucky against Kennesaw State, because hey, Kennesaw State pulled the fast one on Liberty.
They look good, man. That game was awesome.
That was a legit game to watch. And like, if you tuned into that one, it was like, oh, like, wow,
I tuned into it when Twitter started blowing up. Like, oh my God, turn this game on right now. I was like, okay. Again,
0 wins.
Yeah. Like, that was insane. What a great game. Moving on to Thursday on your Halloween for your trick or treat matchup. If you are a person that's into spooky stuff, be a University of Charlotte fan, because Tulane is going to put it on them on Halloween. Hopefully, move it into Friday. We've got San Diego State and Boise State. I feel bad for Coach Ken because they're going to get run all over. Austin Gente is probably going to have a record day. I don't think he's going to get close to any of the previous records by LaDainian Tomlinson way back in the day. But it's going to be close because, like, I like Coach Ken at San Diego State, but Austin Gente is a real deal. Moving into Saturday, hey, you got Army at number 21. Or Air Force at number 21, Army, kicking off on CBS and Paramount Plus. That's going to be different. So that is a change to normal programming, because normally those games are on CBS Sports Network. So you have it on your streaming service and the actual CBS station. Moving on, you got Minnesota at number 20, at Illinois. I think that'll be a better game, man. Minnesota is starting to pick their game up. They're trending upwards. Illinois coming after a heartbreaking loss. I want to say heartbreaking loss. They got whipped pretty bad by Oregon. So we'll see if they can bounce back, but I think that'll be a good contest. You've got Duke at number 6, Miami. Like, can Cam Ward actually put a team away before like the last 2 minutes of the fourth quarter? Like, that's the miracle question of the season for those guys. He hasn't, like, they've won a lot of games, but he hasn't had his Heisman moment, right? Because they've been coming from behind so often that it's not impressive, right? That's expected.
He probably can, but I don't know if this is the week that that's going to occur.
Yeah.
Like, Duke is a better team than people, you know, expect. Yeah.
I don't think they want him going every game like Sugar Ray Leonard getting a 14th round knockout. I think they might want to give him some time off. Yeah. That's going to catch up with him later on in the season.
Well, and that's the thing. And like, I think that's one of the biggest issues now that we have is like the eye test for the Heisman Trophy, because like all the sports writers are like, oh my gosh, he's got to have a Heisman moment. Like, winning just isn't enough. Like, you have to, you know, throw the freaking miracle at Doug Flutie, or, you know, pitch it off your knee against USC like Vince Young did or something like that. You know, you got to have a play that's iconic to really get the sports writers to kind of change their mind. And like, they had a segment, I don't know where I saw it, but there was a segment that was like, hey, look, a lot of these guys that were front runners in September weren't front runners in October. And then, you know, they're front runners in, you know, December that didn't end up winning. So there's a, you know, there's a lot to do there. Moving on, you got Ole Miss at Arkansas. I think that'll be an interesting contest. I think the highlight of the noon slot actually is going to be Penn State and Ohio State, which is weird. So it's probably going to be a whiteout, but it's not a night game. And so advantage Ohio State, you know, playing in Happy Valley during the day. Like something about those wideout games takes the wins out of everyone's sails when they're playing down there. And, you know, as much as James Franklin tries to do his best Keegan-Michael Key impersonation, I don't think he's going to get those guys up for Ohio State.
So much booze by 7:30 just in the stadium alone that the players get a little woozy after dark because that's all they've been doing all day is drinking.
Yeah, it does take real commitment to go into the stadium trashed at noon.
Yeah, it takes a little bit of work.
Michigan in November.
Yeah, you got to start you got to have a couple of anyway, we will move on. I lost my train of thought. I'm getting old.
PG. We're keeping it PG.
Yeah, exactly. So you got Vanderbilt at Auburn. That should be a good contest. That's 12:45 on the SEC Network. Weird time for a kickoff. Just very weird time. Old Dominion at App State. That should be a good one. ULM at Marshall. I think that'll be a better contest than advertised. Kansas State at Houston. Hey, don't sleep on the Wildcats. They're doing pretty well this season. They've got one loss, but they've been stomping people in their wins. And Houston, I mean, we'd like to see them do better. Not really, but I think Kansas is a much better team in that contest. You've got Florida and versus Georgia in Jacksonville. I hear there's a really nice TGI Fridays there. I say that every time, but that's a 3:30 kick on ABC. I think that'll be an interesting game because, like, you know, how do you get Georgia as the home team in Jacksonville? That's just dumb, you know. Whatever, it's a neutral site game, but is it really?
It's always a neutral site game. Game's a neutral site game every year.
Yeah, but I just don't think it'll I just don't think it'll matter.
I think it's gonna be Georgia 34-34.
Oh yeah, I do too. But
yeah, Georgia's gonna make a statement for sure. You've got Indiana playing Michigan State. Michigan State played tough for like look, you know, Jaden Childs is actually a good quarterback. I think if he stays at Michigan and develops in that system, I think he'll be doing pretty well next year. But I don't know if he's going to hang around because, again, previous comment, transfer portal. You've got number one Oregon at Michigan. So this one's an interesting game, and the reason why I say that is because, like I hate to admit this, but Oregon is a tough physical team. Like, if you watch them against Illinois, like, they were hitting very, very hard. However, I think the Michigan defense is much, much better than the offense, but the problem is their offense is so bad. Like, there's nothing, you know what I mean? Like the defense is going to have to pitch shutouts or get defensive touchdowns to actually win that game. And they've got to get pressure on Dylan Gabriel, because they don't get pressure on Dylan Gabriel, he's not going to make a mistake. The kid's got 16,000 yards of passing in his 47 seasons as a college football quarterback. And so they've got to do something to get pressure on that guy. If they don't,
Josiah Stewart, I already showed you some love on this show.
Yeah, it's gonna it could turn into a much
sack last week on Aiden Childs, so he's on his game.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. So it could turn into a long contest. I think Michigan's defense will keep them in it, but Oregon has a lot of weapons, and that'll wear that defense down if they can't, you know, if Michigan can't sustain drives. Navy at Rice. What do we think about that one, folks? Because I think Rice just fired their defensive coordinator this week.
No, they fired their coach.
Oh, their head coach. Yeah. So, you know, so coaching move.
It's very questionable that they're going to get somebody better to go coach at Rice. I mean, if you look at the historic performance, the guy that they let go had actually done quite a bit by the standards of the school. But then again, they spent God knows how much keeping that team together from the off season. And we all thought they were going to be good. And then they came out and they just got wrecked by everybody and seemed to get better over the course of the season. So it's like, what was the point of not letting anybody go to the transfer portal? So yeah. I don't know, man, I it's hard to believe that they would beat the mids considering how good Navy's been, but it's kind of a tougher game than you think. Rice plays a real defense.
Yeah.
And the line is minus 12. So it's a little odd, you know, it's like, is Navy gonna, because that's a really easy line to attain. It's also a really easy line to backdoor cover, depending on the turnover ratio.
Yeah, well, let's flip it over to Omar since he's a resident expert on the American and he does all of our writing. Like, another segue. That one's free. I did that one for free, guys.
Oh man, expert is a loosely used term. I will say about the Rice coaching situation, I envision a world where the Rice boosters come out of the woodworks like they did for SMU, and how they push them to the ACC. and I envision Rice gets someone of quality, but I don't think that's going to happen. I'm actually working on an article about the whole slow build for Rice, because I think it's very interesting, like you said, Dano, how Mike Bloomgren legitimately is one of the best coaches Rice has ever had since the 60s. Yeah. To say, with a 24-52 record, but two bowl games takes you a long way. And
I mean, if you're the only one that's got two bowl games.
I mean, it's more than Todd Graham had at Rice, but he was just there for 1 year. So, I mean, of course it is. But yeah, so I think with that one, with Rice, it's interesting because I don't know if EJ Warner was injured last week, but they went with the new quarterback. The defense, like you said, has been playing good against Tulane. That was really surprising. It was just turnovers that did Rice in, but I just don't think – I don't think they'll have an ability to defend Navy all that well, especially against that offense. They struggled against Army earlier in the season. So I have no indication that Rice covers, honestly. And if I just think it's going to be two touchdown game, at least, really. I think Navy's got a lot to prove still after last week. I don't think they let the – I think they learn from the unforced errors, and I just think he can get ugly quickly. And – honestly, I think something that someone said about other teams going through the same thing, that like teams like East Carolina might be in give up mode. I don't know if Rice is exactly in give up mode, but you know, the situation with a new coach, your star transfer portal quarterback has been benched or is injured. And it's like, what exactly is there to play for if you're Rice other than pride? But I mean,
ECU won last week, so yeah. They're definitely
in give up mode. It's Temple, though. It's yeah. Temple. Like,
yeah, ECU actually looked good. They fired their coach in like 152 yeah. points. So it's like, maybe there was something there. You know,
maybe.
Like moving a little bit deeper into the slate. So we got number 14, Texas A&M. I'm going to throw that out there because I got yelled at last week because of the Texas A&M game against the other USC that kicks at 7:30 on ABC and ESPN. You got Louisville at Clemson. Like, which Louisville shows up? Right? Is it going to be the Louisville that plays people tough, or are they just going to lay down and die? I would love to see, you know, a close game between Louisville and Clemson. Why? Just because, like, Clemson is quietly hanging around. However, yeah. I mean, what an ACC championship if it turns out to be Pittsburgh and Clemson, but they're on the schedule, so that's not going to happen. But that's going to be a great game. When that one shows up, Pitt against Clemson is going to be a game changer for the ACC. You've got Kentucky.
Before you go on, can I point out that Clemson is the elusive school that does not use the transfer portal and is also good?
Yeah.
He's recruiting his own players.
Yeah. Well, surprise, surprise. You know, there's something to that. You know, I think a coach that recruits for his culture has an edge in today's college football. And yeah. I think over time we'll see that a lot more. Moving on, you got Kentucky against Tennessee. That's going to be a much better contest because if Kentucky plays defense like they did against Georgia, like the Vols got their work cut out for them. Yeah. I mean, anybody that plays Kentucky has their work cut out. They're SEC team. They're going to come after you. So we'll see what happens. This one is going to be a barn burner, folks. Pitt at SMU. Tune in. That one's going to be 8:00 on the ACC network. Like, sit back, relax, get some popcorn, enjoy that football contest, because I think that one's going to be one of the most legit games of the weekend. And then we end the slate with Colorado State and Nevada, for those of you that care about those teams. But at least it is a left coast game that kicks before 10:00, right? And that's all I care about. If it kicks before 10 p.m. Eastern time, I am happy. So we will move on to our weekly locks.
Weekly locks.
All right, Dano, what you got?
I went 1-2 again last week. Notre Dame covered, as we have talked about extensively. Oregon destroyed Illinois. Did not think that was going to happen. And Louisiana Monroe got up on South Alabama early. I even told my wife, hey, look, I picked ULM and they're going to cover. And then USA hung 34 points in the second half, pitched a shutout. It's god awful. What are we doing? So, I don't know. Go with me if you dare. So, I'm taking Tulane minus 16 at Charlotte. You talked about it, man. The green wave is rolling. They got a point to prove. They very much think that they're the best team in the American, and somebody's going to have to prove them wrong. I am not totally convinced that that's going to happen this year. I also picked Tulsa plus 3.5 at UAB. I mean, these are two bad teams, but I think Tulsa is way less bad. Tulsa runs the ball. UAB cannot stop the run. That should be enough to decide the contest. I think Tulsa wins outright. And then finally, Vanderbilt plus 6.5 at Auburn. Folks just don't want to admit the truth, man. Vanderbilt is good. Like, it is what it is.
Yeah, for sure. Omar, what about you?
All right. So my first lock, this might come as a surprise, but I got Akron over Buffalo on an even line. Take the money line, I think, on Akron. And here's why. I know Buffalo, we can play all the transitive stuff that we want with Buffalo beating Northern Illinois, beating Notre Dame. But Buffalo right now is a team that is in disarray right now. They're 4-4. Yes, they're fighting for their bowl lives, but they have just bad momentum. They have a lack of momentum. Things are going the wrong direction. Last week, they got beat by 31 against Ohio. Ohio ran for over 250 yards on them. Akron found their run game, and they beat 5-2 Eastern Michigan. Yeah, 5-2 Eastern Michigan at home. Akron hosts Buffalo at InfoCision again this weekend. And I just like that pick. I think Akron is starting to figure things out under Joe Moorhead. Talk about a slow build. I think one more year of Moorhead. Sorry. That came out the wrong way. One more year of Joe Moorhead. One more year of Joe Moorhead should make or break this in. But okay, let me just go on to the next pick before we get on to that one. For my second pick, I have Hawaii plus 14 on Fresno State. I don't know if you gentlemen, I think we're all you guys are an East Coast crowd, but on Team One Sports app, Braden Shager had a game I don't think I've ever seen a Hawaii quarterback have. 120 yards, 4 rush touchdowns. The run and shoot has a different element. And I want to point to for this one, Hawaii also in defense, they made Ashton Jeanty look human. People overlook with UNLV, how we played last week. Like, he looked very human against Hawaii, even though we ran for 217 yards on 31 carries. So there's much to be said there. And also, too, I sense bad blood with the Pac-12 Mountain West split. And adding that bad blood, there's a real rivalry with Hawaii and Fresno State. Timmy Chang is their quarterback. Timmy Chang was a quarterback when they got beat 70-14 in 2004. You don't think Timmy Chang is going to have those guys ready to play with all the stories that there are about Fresno State and Hawaii and apparently June Jones having a screwdriver thrown at him? Like, give me Hawaii plus 14 potential money line even. Don't take the money line, though. But my last pick, you guys might laugh at this one, but I got UMass.
He froze because the pick is so out of left field.
Both teams have one win. But if you're Mississippi State, you're 1-7. What reason realistically do you have to get up to play UMass at home?
No, oh, wow.
Like, what? But I'll say this.
Okay,
this.
So you froze there for just a second. So to recap, UMass plus 18.5 versus Mississippi State. What reason do they have to get up? I mean, it's an SEC team, man.
What reason does Mississippi State? Yeah, what reason does Mississippi State have to get up for a game against UMass?
That's what I'm saying. They're going to get relegated out of the SEC, send them down to the ACC, and pull up Clemson.
with that being said, for those of us that watched the UMass game and didn't, or the watched the UMass Missouri game and didn't write it off as a complete waste of time, UMass had some momentum in the first half. They were driving before Tyson Fomichon threw a very ill-advised pick in the red zone. That game could have been 21-10 heading into halftime.
Shocking.
UMass likes throwing the ball. They like to slow the game down. And I think Don Brown is going to have Mississippi State in a situation similar to how he had us last year. Because, again, I'm sure UMass fans are asking – well, they weren't asking if Army can get up for UMass. But it's an Army – it's a game against UMass in the middle of the season. It's the Minutemen are prone to not get taken seriously. So right. I think at the very least, and keep in mind, I got the history too. 2017, UMass was up at halftime. I think it was 23-3 or 20-3 at halftime on a ranked Mississippi State squad in Starkville.
Plus,
it happened. Yeah. Crazier things have happened. Mississippi State's 1-6 right now.
All right.
Hey, that's a fair assessment. At least he's got the analytics.
See that game at 38-21 and UMass covering on the back door.
Great team's cover. A cover's a cover. Thanks, Joe. That's
Joe, what's up? Mississippi State is bad.
Yeah.
But I picked the alphabet of games last week and went 4-2. BYU, Duke, North Texas, and Indiana covered. Actually, North Texas ended up being a push because I had them at 8 and it was 8. And then Wisconsin and Ohio State didn't cover. But hey, if you bet 100 on each one, you're up 2. So, you know, win's a win. This week, pick one, Dano stole it. Vandy plus 6.5 at Auburn. Unless Diego Pavia is hurt, I have no idea how this Auburn Tigers team that just got off a 4-game schneid by beating Kentucky is favored over a team that just lost to Texas by 3 and has beat Alabama this season by this many points. I like Vandy to win outright in a close one. All right, pick number two. This is a gross one. Nebraska minus 6.5 versus UCLA. Look, it is no secret that UCLA is a bad football team this year. It's also been pretty regular occurrence that Nebraska beats up on the little guy, as they've covered this number against a pretty good Colorado team, Purdue, Northern Iowa, Rutgers, and UTEP. I believe they cover this number again on Saturday after a tough loss to Ohio State, where they showed that they've got a little bit of fight in them. So I think they come into the game with a chip on their shoulder and take care of business, as UCLA is pretty bad. Pick number three is the North Carolina Tar Heels that showed some life. Minus 2.5 at Florida State. Pretty obvious that it's a fire sale in Tallahassee because Florida State is a walking dumpster fire. And if the Tar Heels can go into a 500 Virginia Cavaliers home and beat them 41-14, they can do the same thing to Florida State. And I believe they win this game handily, and this line is priced wrong. Give me the Heels minus 2.5. Pick number four is the Pittsburgh Panthers at SMU plus 7.5. I know this one may be a little bit, maybe get a little pushback because of how good SMU has been this year, but only one of these teams has a loss, and it's not Pittsburgh. And with what they did to Syracuse on Thursday night, I believe Pittsburgh will be the better rested team because they got extra time and is going into the game expecting to win because they haven't been beat this year. Anytime a team is playing that well and getting 7.5 points against an equally talented squad, give me the team that's favorite or getting over a touchdown. So I'll take Pittsburgh plus 7.5.
All right. Thanks. And for me, so I went 0-2-1 this week. I'll take the push with Michigan State because I took that line really, really early, and I didn't want to take advantage of it in the Pick'ems League. Like, if it was against Vegas, I'd take the money. But because it's the Pick'em League, I went 0-2-1. We don't really want to dive too much into that, so we'll go straight to picks. This week, take Jackson State to cover plus 1.5 against Liberty. The Flames lost their 0 against Kennesaw State, and Jackson State plays similar style of football. I think that'll be much, much closer to the expert
thing. Lost their 0-2.
Yeah, for sure. I think Jackson State. I think Jackson State is going to win outright, probably by a field goal, maybe even an overtime field goal. But we'll see what happens with that one. Take Tulane to freaking whoop on Charlotte. They're going to hit the over of 55.5. Tulane will try and score 100 points if they could. So for sure, yeah.
they got to work on that national ranking.
Yeah, Tulane's on a campaign to show that they're the best team in the American, regardless what. Army and Navy are doing. Tulane is right there in the hunt, and you know, in their mind, they're probably leading the dance right now in the American as far as we're concerned. And then again, take Duke to cover 20.5 against Miami. I think the Hurricanes are hot, but they've been winning a lot of close games, you know. So 20.5, that seems like a stretch. Like, if that was Duke of 2 years ago, I might have bought off on it, but like Duke this season, I don't buy it. I think Vegas got this one clearly wrong. Take Duke to cover the spread. And if you're really concerned to try and break even, take Miami on the money line so you don't lose too much cash. But we are at the end of the show, folks. And we're going to close this out. We got another week of college football in the record books. We'd like to say thanks to Omar for joining us because he rarely gets to make an appearance on the live show. So we're very thankful to have him here. He's the guy that's been cranking out all the articles about the American Athletic Conference football. So check those out, please. He's get on the mailing list, check out the website, take a look at his articles. He's been doing a lot of great work for us, and we're just happy for him to be here with us this week on the show. Note, the Army football show this week will be live. It's not behind the paywall because it's Air Force week. It's rivalry week. If it flies, it dies. We're going to talk about that live on the show. We're going to break down some of the other stuff. I'd also like to plug the interview that James from Brigade Review did last week with AJ to discuss the Lambert Trophy. I think that was a really, really cool discussion. It's a great piece of history for college football. So if you know nothing about that that trophy, I think it's good to take a look at the Lambert Trophy and the Lambert Cup. Both of those are awesome. Again, just really, really cool. Just last final note that we will be going live tomorrow, and we will be talking about beating the hell out of Air Force. So for the crew here at As for Football College Football Roundtable or Ring Knocker Radio, I'm your host, Rob, the Angry Colonel out of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We got Dano Icabesa calling out of Coastal Connecticut. Trigger Joe is in the home of the Big House. And from the great state of Tejas, we got Omar closing out the team. Hey, we will see you guys next week. Oh, as a matter of fact, we'll see you guys tomorrow night. Same bat time, same bat channel as we as always, beat Air Force.
Beat them.
Thanks for joining us on the Ask for Football College Football Roundtable. Special thanks to our sponsor, Jocelyn Bradley Real Estate. If you're buying or selling, reach out to Jocelyn for expert service. If you enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon at patreon.com/askforfootball. Your support will help keep the lights on and bring in more great content. Plus, you'll get access to exclusive perks and behind-the-scenes extras. Thanks for being a part of the Ask for Football community. Go Army, beat Navy, and we'll catch you guys next week.